if I never came to the US, I would have never met a lot of my friends who have had a huge impact on my life, you know? And so in that sense, like, how can I regret coming here?
Hey guys, welcome back to Two Suitcases. This is a show where we unpack immigration stories and explore complex topics that transcend borders and culture. I am Raksha Rajagopalan.
And I am Bharat Madras Natarajan. This episode is part of a mini-series where we dig deep to better understand our personal and family immigration stories. In the last two episodes, we talked to my mom, Sukanya, and Raksha's dad, Raj, about their journeys. It gave us a better understanding of our parents' struggles, motivations, and experiences.
In today's episode, we pick up that cross-generational narrative as Bharat and I share our stories of growing up in Zambia and the journey that led us to the US. Bharat, ready to do this?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm excited to talk about our story.
Yeah. I think like I haven't really taken the time to look back. But yeah, I'm excited for this conversation.
Me too. So let's kick this off. I want to know a little bit about your childhood and what was your life like growing up in Zambia?
Oh man, my childhood. So let me start off with where I was born, I guess. As some of you may deduce from my name, I was born in Madras, now known as Chennai. But honestly, I don't really have too many memories from India. Because by the time my family moved to Zambia, I was about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And so my first real vivid memory was, I think, when we landed at the Lusaka airport. And I remember that my dad came to pick us up with a Zambian driver. And I think I just started talking to the driver in English and felt pretty good about it. Now, in reality, I don't know how good my English was, but that's really one of my first vivid memories of being impressed about my language skills, you know?
I can actually picture little Bharat doing that. That's cute.
Yeah. So I don't really have too many memories of India, but, you know, growing up in Zambia is, I don't know, looking back, you realize how unique that experience was.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it is just a normal, mundane childhood. So I always found myself kind of juggling in between two different cultures from a young age. I went to schools, for the most part, Zambian schools that still followed the British Cambridge curriculum, but were predominantly Zambian schools. And there was a point when I think even in high school, before high school, there was at least like 2 or 3 years when I was really the only non-black person in the whole school. And I think like it was only after I moved from that school to come and do my high school and IB in at the International School of Lusaka that I really had the experience of having Indian classmates, having classmates from different international backgrounds. So I think for me, I always grew up kind of having a Zambian set of friends. And then in the Tamil Indian community, you kind of have people that are like of a similar age group that you kind of hang out with at all these like cultural programs.
This is after school programs, right?
Yeah. Like you hang out with friends at like, you know, so there's this organization called the Zambia Tamil Arts and Cultural Association in Lusaka.
Zataka.
Yep. So Zataka would host all these cultural events where like, you know, kids would dance, kids would sing, like any kind of talent. They would have talent shows. They would have, you know, shows for Diwali programs and things like that. And so you always had a group of friends outside of your school, at least for me, outside of my school that were Tamil, that were Indian. And so you kind of had to like lead this dual life. So that's kind of how I think a lot of my childhood was, you know, living in Zambia. But at the same time, you know, one of the things I did, for example, was I learned to play the tabla for about 10 years before I moved to the US.
And I have to add, he was very, very good.
Yeah. So like, you know, there was always a tabla teacher in the community. There was always a Bharatanatyam teacher in the community. There's actually a point in my life when I tried to learn Bharatanatyam for like 6 months.
He was the only guy in our Bharatanatyam class. Like he's also the only guy in my yoga class currently. Go Bharat.
So, you know, you had all these opportunities as a kid to kind of keep keep in touch with cultural arts, at least Indian cultural arts, if not Tamil. So, you know, it's a weird thing having to do that on Friday nights and on the weekends. And then Monday morning, you go into school where you're the only non-black kid in the whole school. And still, you still feel, at least I still felt like home in both those communities, you know. So I think that's how a lot of my childhood was, really.
Did your childhoods merge? Meaning, did your, you know, friends that were in school ever hang out with you after school? Or was those lives very separate?
I think for the most part, those lives were very separate. It wasn't until I joined ISL, the International School of Lusaka, where I joined for high school and IB. It wasn't until that point when really my Zambian friends would be able to even come home and chill. I think it's just a matter of once you reach a certain age, you have more like autonomy and decision making, and like going to sleepovers and things like that maybe feels a bit more normal. I think it wasn't really a normal thing with like my non-Indian friends, at least.
Fair enough.
Because I don't think they were part of the same community as like my Zambian friends' parents were not really part of the same community as my parents. So yeah, it was really hard to kind of for those two worlds to really collide.
That makes sense.
Yeah. How about you, Raksha? How was your childhood? I'm guessing pretty similar, but
A little different, I want to say. Yeah. So for me, my parents actually lived in, if you heard my dad speak before, the previous episode, my parents actually lived in Africa before I was even born. When my mom was pregnant with me, my parents were in Tanzania. And with the medical facilities, they didn't feel really comfortable, and also not having any family around, they actually decided that my mom will go to India to have me so she could be closer to her mom and her brothers and siblings. So that's what happened. I was born in Bangalore, and my parents took me back to Tanzania when I was about 40 days old. So I don't really remember much about living in Tanzania because I think, you know, I was super young. Apparently, I could speak Swahili very well. That's the local language there, but my parents still speak Swahili, which is pretty cool. So yeah, and then we moved to Zambia when I was about 2 or 3 years old, and we moved to a small town called Ndola, which is not really small, smaller in comparison to Lusaka, which is the capital. Yeah, I remember Ndola a little bit. We lived in a really nice house. We had a lot of bunnies and dogs, and I think that's where my love for animals grew. So it was really normal childhood. And I think when we moved to Lusaka, I remember living in this big, big house. And Bharat, funny story, I don't know if you know this, we lived literally 5 minutes away from where you guys currently live now, where your parents live.
No way.
Yeah, and we moved out of the house because we had some visitors that were held at gunpoint.
Oh.
nothing happens like that anymore, but I thought that was a really...
I think it still happens, but I think it's almost like a normal... Okay, people are going to take this out of context. It's a normal part of life in the sense that you hear these stories, and once in a couple of years, it might happen to you, but it's not like everyone's getting robbed at gunpoint.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because I used to use this as, what's a fun fact about you? And I'd say, I saw someone get held at gunpoint.
Wow.
Well. But anyway, so pretty normal. Actually, the thing is, I went to the international school since reception, which is the first class, I think. I basically did almost all of my schooling at ISL. And then I had little stints of moving to India. My parents sent me to India in the fourth grade for about 8 months because they were worried about their own immigration.
Yeah.
So they just didn't feel comfortable having me not have a secure and stable time at school. So they decided, let's just send her to India. It might work out better for us. So I went and I stayed with my grandparents and my uncle's family, which was great. I learned how to read and write Tamil. I still remember it. So that was great. But then when we came back, they decided in my eighth grade, you know, we really want you to learn dance and music, so maybe we could also go to India for a year with your mom. And I think also they had their own struggles, my parents, with their own immigration again. They sent all four of us, meaning my siblings and my mom and I, we went to India. That's where I went and learned. I went to a dance school called Kalakshetra, and I learned music. It was all in Chennai, which was a great experience. Actually, I really enjoyed having that dual exposure because I feel very close to my culture, having lived in India and at that age, learning all these arts, and also living in Zambia. So I just felt it was a great balance. Nice. But pretty much my childhood, birth. apart from that, everything else is pretty similar, like you were saying. You know, I also did these Bharatanatyam classes. I also had dual friendships where I had my Tamil friends. And then I had my friends that were, you know, school friends. But I think for me, there was a bit of an overlap because a lot of my Tamil friends or Indian friends that we my parents would also be friends with outside of school with their parents, we all met most of the time outside of school. So sleepovers were pretty normal from a young age. Yeah. And but I did feel that I was closer to my Tamil friends.
Okay.
Because I think I spent more time with them planning all these cultural activities, you know, planning all these dances. So I met them more often and my parents were hanging out with their parents. So it just felt that I was closer to them when I was younger. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much my childhood.
Did you having to move to India at such a young age, kind of a couple of times back and forth, did you ever feel like you were out of place every time you had left and then also come back to Zambia?
That's a great question. When I went to India, I don't know, I did feel out of place, but I always tried to fit in India. Mm. And I spoke Tamil really well, so I always try to just kind of assimilate as quickly, but also knowing that everybody thought that I was an outsider.
Yeah.
But coming back to Zambia was pretty easy because the friends that I already had always just realized that, oh, she just goes and she comes back. It was easy. I think that there was one interim period when my parents tried to shift me from the international school to another international school called Baobab. That's where Natasha is a teacher. That's Bart's fiance. Yeah. And I didn't fit in well there. I think it was predominantly white students, and I just didn't feel like they accepted me. I would get bullied a little bit for taking Indian food and just stuff like that. So when I expressed that to my parents that I didn't feel comfortable in this environment, they moved me back to international school, which was very mixed. You know, I had kids from all over the world, plus a lot of Indians, plus a lot of Zambians. So it was pretty normal for me.
Yeah. And also compared to Baobab, I think ISL was very much Indo-centric. there were a few years when it was a little bit Indian heavy, and it would be dubbed the Indian School of Lusaka.
Yep.
I can see how, you know, staying at ISL would have given you a bit more exposure or consistency in terms of friends, because a lot of the similar people that we know in the Tamil and like the Indian community also tended to go to the International School of Lusaka.
That's correct. And a lot of the people that I started off with in reception, we all ended up graduating IB together.
Right.
Which was fantastic.
Which is what, 13 years?
13 years. And we're still in touch, and, you know, everybody got married. So it's just great to know that these are the people that you grew up with, and they are, you know, we kind of went through this whole journey together. And even though I kind of moved back and forth, whereas everyone was there for the most part, but it just felt at home for me.
So actually, this is a good segue. So a lot of your friends, are they kind of in the US? Are a lot of them still in Zambia, or, you know, where did they end up?
A lot of them are everywhere. So I think I would say 90% of everybody that I interacted with or my classmates, I don't think they ended up being in Zambia. So everyone left for college, right? They moved to either South Africa, they moved to Australia, they moved to the UK or the US, some people Amsterdam. But I'm just saying, like, it was never just we were all staying in Zambia. We were all looking to see where we're moving, when we were moving and where we were moving.
Yeah.
And I always knew that I was going to move outside. I was never had the thoughts that I would stay in Zambia for school. It was never a thing.
It was always kind of predetermined that, at least for in my family, right? It was kind of predetermined that you would leave Zambia at some point in order to get better education, right? Yeah. Whether it's at a high school level, whether it's at a college level. There were times when before Rahul started IB, me and him took an entrance exam for an international school in Bangalore. And I remember there was a serious conversation at home of whether it made sense for Rahul and I to move to Bangalore with my mom and for Appa to still stay in Zambia, or if maybe there's a program in Zambia that would allow Rahul to still be able to step up and move out for college. And so he ended up doing IB at ISL.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that conversation also revolved around, can we afford to do that for two of the kids, right? Because I don't think my parents were ever willing to have Rahul have certain opportunities and me not have similar opportunities. So I think that was a very, very conscious decision that I think about now. You know, even when it came to college, right? Like, once Rahul decided to come to the US, it was almost like the rest of the doors kind of shut for me.
Right.
Right. It was like, okay, US is your main focus. Now, I don't remember having that conversation with my parents, mm-hmm. right? I think it was always kind of just understood that wherever Rahul goes, it's probably easiest for me to follow and join him, right? So if mm-hmm. Rahul ended up in India, which was a very real possibility at that point, then I would have probably followed him to India as well.
Wow, that's interesting. I think for me, it was a little different because my siblings are 8 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So the decision was predominantly on me, you know. I think I was just given the choice that, listen, if you want to do arts, I don't know what they even deem as arts. I mean, really. But they said, if you want to do arts, and I was like, well, I was really interested in things that were not science. But they said, if you want to do arts, you move to India because my parents' thought process was it would be very difficult for you to find a job with that kind of degree in the US or the UK.
And the amount of money you would have to spend for that.
Yeah. And, you know, the experience would be short-lived. And they said, you know, if you have a science background, you could go to the US or UK. And being young, and I think I was also with Rahul, my now husband, and also helped me make my decision. And I said,
and you guys were dating in high school, right?
So you're right.
If you're like, you know, going through the college application process, you guys must have done that, trying to be on the same page to some extent there.
Yes and no. I don't know if you know this, but yes and no. I think I was very, very particular that I didn't want to go to the same university.
Okay.
And he always wanted to go to the same university as me.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I want to be independent. I want to go to something different. And of course, we end up going to the same university because we both got the biggest scholarship for particular university that we went to. So, I mean, that was a no-brainer. My dad was like, you got the scholarship. You need to go, you know? So, it was, for me, it was always just I wanted to come to the US, I guess, or the UK. And going to India at that time when I was younger was not that attractive for me. So, and plus, obviously, I had Rahul as a decision factor in my life at that point as well. So, I ended up doing science and moved to the US.
So how did you guys kind of prepare for the experience? Or did you kind of not even think too much about it and kind of just go with the flow?
That's a great question. Now that I'm thinking back, I mean, preparation-wise, I think the only thing my parents were really worried about was the cold weather.
Okay.
And we haven't experienced that. But and I didn't really have any family here or anything. I had a family friend and then a distant cousin who were at least there when I initially moved here to help me out in some ways. But pretty much we were on our own. And luckily we had each other. So that was a really a great thing. I think we leaned on each other a lot more. But no, not really any big expectations. I think I was excited you know, I was excited that I'm going to come to college here. I would look at Google Maps. I would try to figure out how the university looks. Listen, I had a perspective of how a university should be based on watching movies.
Yeah.
And trust me when I say, and I landed and I went to my campus, I was so sad.
Yeah.
I was like, this is an urban campus. I mean, I knew it, mm-hmm. but I was like, there is no real lawn. And it just made me really frustrated because you have this picture in your head of how a campus should be and how beautiful and big it needs to be. And I'm like, oh, this is not really what I imagined it to be, even though I saw pictures.
Yeah.
But you would form more images in your head and hoping it would be better.
Yeah.
And I think I did that. This is where Raul says all the time, stop building castles in the air.
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of only really started thinking about how life on campus would be after I got accepted into UW. And so for me, it was just like, okay, once I got that acceptance and once I decided that that's where I was going to go, I Googled up pictures. I put it on Google Maps and like tried to chart my route from this building to this residence hall and whatnot. And that's really the only kind of expectation I had coming on. So like, I think for me, I wasn't necessarily disappointed in any sense or didn't necessarily feel like something didn't meet my expectations, because honestly, I had a clean slate when it came to expectations. There really wasn't much in terms of like the physical appearance of the campus.
I think we went to go check out your campus, Barth, UW, and I was so sad. I was like, wow, this is a really nice campus and we have to walk a lot.
Yeah.
Whoa, look at that. And look at, you know, I was really excited for you. You know, those are the only things I think I did in terms of having an expectation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think just coming to the US was exciting.
Yeah.
Really, it was.
Yeah, for sure. I think it definitely was. And for me especially, so I was a huge, and I still am a huge hip hop head. So for me, like, my brother coming to Chicago, like the city of Common, city of Kanye, for me it was really exciting in that sense, right? But speaking on that though, one of the expectations that I did probably have subconsciously moving to Wisconsin was maybe just a bit more diversity on campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't that huge an issue. It's something that I realized maybe in like my third or fourth year that it would really be nice to see different faces from different experiences, right? But I think that's probably the one thing when I look back that I wish was a bit different when it comes to campus life. But at the same time, I think I really just I just dipped myself into campus life,
yeah,
right? I didn't really think too much about who I was meeting or like from what kind of background I was meeting. Like, I met friends, and a lot of those friends had really cool stories. Like, one of my best friends, shout out to Sammy, he's from Darlington, Wisconsin, like little small town in Wisconsin. And we have one of the best friendships I can think about, right? So like, I feel like I was still blessed to meet people from a different background that I was never used to, right? So for me, coming from Zambia, like, small town Wisconsin is kind of intriguing, you know? Like, I went on one of my spring breaks, I went with him for a few days back home and chilled with him in Darlington, Wisconsin, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Was it different from, you know, our families, and how was, you know, was it different for you?
I think fundamentally, no, you know, fundamentally, like, It's all moms and dads who care about their kids and who want the best for their kids. And it's all moms and dads who, like, not just want the best for their kids, but like want the best for their personal and professional lives too. So, you know, on a very fundamental level, I felt like I could connect with Sammy and his family.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other people that I met in Madison as well, right? A lot of people from like smaller towns. So in that sense, I really enjoyed, I was really intrigued by this life that is so different from mine,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I kind of enjoyed it. But I guess, yeah, at some point after like a couple of years, it got to a point of, okay, I would like to meet more people from more varied backgrounds.
Did you do anything about it consciously to try meet people from different backgrounds?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of niches and pockets within campus,
mm-hmm.
right? There's, you know, there's obviously the Indian Student Association, shout out to them. There's the Muslim Student Association. I kind of got involved a bit more with the African Students Association. I think one of the dichotomies I had was, am I Indian
mm-hmm.
or am I Zambian? You know, that's something that, you know, to this day, I kind of struggle with that balance.
Yeah.
So for me, in a sense, I found home with a lot of the folks in the African Students Association. And at the same time, I also found home with a lot of folks in the Indian Students Association. You know, so for me, I felt like you kind of have to look a little bit harder on campus for some of these pockets of diversity.
Yeah.
But it's there, but it really shouldn't have to be that hard to find it, right? So I think that's one of the things I wish I had. I would have loved to come to maybe a smaller university, but here in downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I would have met people. Now, granted, Chicago is also very segregated.
Yeah.
But I feel like that might have exposed me to a wider range of folks from different backgrounds. But again, the one thing I learned going to Madison is everyone has a unique story, and their story is intriguing and interesting, and there's common ground if you look deep enough. So that's one of the biggest, I think, like, takeaways from my 5 years in college.
That's very interesting. I think you're right. In a way, with my campus, I had a mixture of people that I, you know, diversity was pretty big, I would say. Of course, they were all engineers for the most part, which was very difficult for me in the beginning because I just didn't speak the same language. You know, playing video games in the middle of the night and playing through the night. I started to love it at some point, and I would do it, but, you know, it was hard for me. But in terms of friends, I remember I joined an a cappella group because I like to sing, and it was all mostly everybody was white in the group. And I would try to fit in, but in some ways I just felt like I couldn't really relate. It was difficult. Like, I mean, I think we all related on the fact that we all love to sing. But there was some things where I found it a little difficult, and I kind of missed just having that one friend who is that Indian friend who completely understands my parents, and, you know, I could just talk about it and they get it.
Yeah,
where I'm like, ah, my parents are calling me all the time, or something that I just wasn't able to, I think, relate to with other people. So naturally, I think I kind of gravitated towards my little Indian bubble friends, which I think I did it subconsciously, not consciously. And I just felt at home. But of course, I had friends that were not just Indian. I had other friends that I would hang out with. And I think my main group of friends just somehow always, even in high school, ended up being predominantly Indian. And I think for you, it's kind of the opposite.
It's really interesting you say that, because for me, it really was opposite. I think my freshman year, I kind of was in this friend group of like mainly Indians from India. And, you know, we kind of became friends, and we kind of would do like campus stuff together. But then, I don't know, I think also maybe subconsciously, I kind of veered away from them. And I don't know why, because again, maybe this is something we need to discuss a little bit further on at some point. But again, that duality of identity, right? Like balancing between being Indian and being African to some extent.
Right.
Right. I think I've never completely felt comfortable in Indian circles. And I also think I never allowed myself to be comfortable in completely Indian circles. Right. Because like for me, a lot of my friends now from college, a lot of them are Indians, mate. Mm-hmm. And like, and I feel like I just never, I always had this either stereotypes or this discomfort with not being the only Indian in the room, which for a lot of my life, I really was just that.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe a lot of, I do recognize that a lot of people's experiences of being the only person of a certain minority in a room is very drastically different from mine. But coming into college, I actually veered myself and like pushed my Indian friends away to some extent, and like was very like comfortable with folks from other cultural backgrounds. And then I think towards the end, I kind of got pulled into those groups again. And this time, I think with a bit more of an appreciation for their stories and their backgrounds. So that's, I think, in a way, very different from what my experience was. Yeah,
100%. I think when I now look back, all my closest friends were pretty much Indian.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I love them, obviously. But it just so happened to be that way.
Yeah. So kind of, I want to switch gears a little bit, because, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to even talk about our immigration stories is kind of talk to some of the logistical challenges of it, right? How, when I came in, and I'll speak for myself, right? When I came to the country, I felt like there was a lot of things to kind of keep track of and to constantly keep track of, you know, like you had to be worried about getting your first internship right away. You had to be worried about getting a social security card. You have to be worried about starting to build your credit score, which like all your peers have been able to start doing that since they were kids. You just have, this is your first time having to do it. You have to start worrying about setting your resume up so that 4-5 years down the line, when you're looking for a job, you make sure it is damn impeccable, right? And so I felt like that pressure was there from the very moment I stepped on campus that first time. So did you have similar kind of expectations or pressure on yourself to kind of be on top of those things?
I wish I did.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think I transferred my knowledge of having to put importance on these things maybe to you and my sister, but we just kind of went with the flow, where I didn't even know what GPA meant. Like, I just didn't know how important the first semester's GPA should be. You know, I think I learned as we went on the importance of internships and the importance of, your resume being impeccable. I think eventually I got it. I think in my third year of college, I said, okay, really need to figure this out.
Yeah.
Right. But getting a social security and building all that credit, I think, yes, we kind of learned that early on a little bit, hearing people tell us that it's important to do those things, but just really kind of went with the flow. And knowing what I know now, I think I did it better when I was in my master's program, because I had learned all of this and I felt I wanted a redo. I really wanted a redo, and I wanted to do it better and bigger this time and kind of have my control on my life.
Yeah.
Which I didn't fully, you know, I wouldn't understand. My dad would say, oh, you need, you know, the importance of, you need to find this internship and you need to do this. And I would just say, yeah, I'm doing it. Like, but you know, it wasn't the seriousness of it until we were nearly graduating. And then you understand, you get on this OPT, which is the visa that students are given. And then, oh my gosh, like the work visa is a lottery. All those, the pressure just comes onto you.
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, I had a little bit of guidance before, but I wouldn't change anything for it. I think it made me more resilient towards now in the later stage of my life where I went through all of that kind of immaturely, but young and carefree. And I'm happy that now I, you know, I have all the pressure, not pressure, but to be able to figure it out and put more importance on things that has value.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I think maybe as you'd mentioned, right? Like, because you are the first person really in our circle to go through something like that, you and Rahul. It's like going through this, you kind of learn from making mistakes or learn from just going through the process. Whereas for me, it's just like, I always have this jolt in my heart whenever I feel like, oh, did I miss something visa wise? Yeah. Should I have reported something to the International Student Center? Like, oh, am I supposed to like do something for my I-90 or whatever it was? Yeah. It's just like, there's always this thing of, oh, is there something I missed out?
Yeah.
So maybe let's take a quick break and we'll come back in a bit.
So Bharath, looking back, do you think moving to the US was the right choice for you?
Honestly, things worked out the way they needed to work out. When I look back at the journey, there are so many hurdles in the way to get to a place where you can feel like you can settle down that I don't know if I would have made the same decision. At the same time, I also acknowledge that the decision wasn't really mine to make, right? I think Rahul probably had a bit more of sway in terms of where mine and his trajectories would lead. So looking back, if I had a little cousin who was applying to the US, honestly, man, like unless it's a particular program or a particular profession that is very specific to a US market where your ceiling is just so high, if the visa implications and if the legal status implications are important, I would suggest the person goes to maybe Canada or maybe Australia, because also looking at what some of my friends have gone through in different places, I feel like I have friends in Canada who already have their PR. I have friends in Australia who already have their PR. And it's just like here in the US, that's the window for that is so small in the sense of like you have to do so many things right. And even then you have to wait 10, 15 years. I'm like, come on, man. Like this life isn't as amazing as I think everyone in Zambia or India make out to be, right? Like people look at the US and think, wow, this place is like, this is the best place in the world. No, this place is really messed up. There's a lot of things that are wrong with it. So for me, not that I regret coming here or anything, right? Like this place has afforded me a lot of opportunities that I could have never dreamt of, right? So I'm really grateful for that. But I think if I had a bit more control over my future, I would have picked a different place. You know, just because the biggest thing for me at this point in my life is a way to start putting my roots down, is a way to like start feeling like this is like permanently home. Because the way things are right now, if I lose a job, I don't get another job, bro, I'm going back to Zambia. I don't know anything about Zambia at this point. You know, like as a geological engineer, there's not really much for me to do in terms of climate policy and infrastructure projects, the kind of work that I want to do, right? So there are certain limitations. So when I think back, maybe I would have picked a different place where I could get that legal status a little bit quicker and not have to worry about that. And I can focus on my personal and professional goals. So yeah. How about for you?
You made me think a lot. So I don't have any regrets. I think in hindsight, it was a great decision for me because I grew as a person. So I think I would have grown as a person anywhere I went, but I have this feeling of some form of attachment to this place only because I moved here when I was 17, 18, and I've been here now for over 12 years. So it just feels this is where I did the majority of my growing up on my own. So I have attachment to this place. I have also learned that I had so much more opportunities here than I did if I stayed in Zambia.
For sure.
But yeah. Now I know also that I can have these opportunities not only in the US, but I could have also had it in Canada or in Europe or, you know, Australia. The world is bigger than just being here. I think the world is what you make of it, right?
Right.
I think growing up in Zambia, the US and UK were the only focal points we had, the only next big step for us, right?
Yeah.
But now, now knowing what I know, I realize that the world is bigger than what I perceived it to be. But I'm really glad that I went through this whole experience. It made me stronger than I, you know, ever even give credit for myself, I think. But it's been a difficult journey in terms of immigration. Sometimes yeah. I felt that there has been limitations in my career trajectory because I've been on the visa. And, you know, I've had the wonderful luck of not being ever picked on this work visa lottery and just stuff like that that comes in your way and makes you think, why me? And why I did everything right. Yeah. And why have I not been able to like move forward? And then I see, you know, and you brought up a good point, man. Like you talked about putting down roots and I would love to because this is now home to me in a weird way in the sense that this is all that I know right now.
Yeah.
And it's just the easy answer is, yeah, I mean, I could just imagine myself living in a little suburb in a little house and just it's the easy answer.
Yeah.
But it's not that answer and the want is not easy for us. That is never going to be easy for us. It's just going to always be difficult to attain that level of comfort that, you know, one of my friends who was born here and has her family here, that she would have a different life. But for me, I have to remind myself that even though this is easy and this is comfortable because this is all that you know now, this is not for you. And I think telling myself that the last year has been really difficult because, you know, you've built all this for yourself. And now because of this immigration and because of this paperwork,
yeah.
you have to change everything, you know, but I still wouldn't take anything back. I think because I've been given the best opportunities here and the best exposure that I could have ever asked for. But again, I could have gotten this anywhere, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I think when you say that, I think about how privileged we are as, you know, both our families, that our parents were able to work and get those opportunities to afford sending us out of the country and particularly to the U.S., right? Because, you know, let's not kid ourselves. International tuition is bloody expensive,
yeah.
right? And our parents were able to put two kids through college. And we were lucky enough, not just from like a financial position,
yeah.
we were also lucky enough to get jobs at good companies where True. We developed as professionals and we are continuing to some extent, right? I think we've also met some amazing people along the way,
yeah.
which is what I think about. It's like, if I never came to the US, I would have never met a lot of my friends who have had a huge impact on my life, you know? And so in that sense, like, how can I regret coming here, yeah. right? But yeah, the immigration story is really difficult. The margin for error is so slim. And even then, it feels like a lot of the decisions is up to fate. It's not really in your hands. I want to ask you, what were some of the specific sacrifices that you feel you had to make looking back on this journey?
I think the biggest one is I didn't go home that frequently. First of all, you know, my dad was paying for my tuition and I have two younger siblings that are now, one graduated from college, one's doing his master's in the UK. But, you know, I always had that in the back of my mind that, you know, my dad is doing so much that I can't travel home all the time. And when we came, the flights were really expensive. Like I would say $3,000 over for a round trip, especially the times we wanted to go. And I think it's still expensive, but I would just be very conscious of that. And I wouldn't travel as frequently as, you know, for example, Rahul or other people that I knew. I would always stay back here in the dorms by myself or figure out a way to stay here. And also during your period when you graduate from undergrad or college, you have this thing called OPT. And there was never a real clarity on can you travel when you're in OPT. There was always this fear that we've been told you can travel.
There's a recommendation not to travel.
Right.
What the hell that means? God.
Yeah, they were just saying, well, you can travel, but we can't tell you not to travel. But if you do travel, keep in mind coming back in could be difficult. And I'm just saying, okay,
yeah.
if you're going to put that out there, how am I even going to travel? So I would not see my family for extended periods of time.
For context, like the OPT is what, in the STEM field is 3 years.
Yeah.
Right, so in that 3 years, every year you can apply for the H-1B lottery, and if you don't get it, you're on the OPT for 3 years, right? And so in those 3 years, it's difficult, as you said, to leave the country.
Yeah.
So what, you didn't see your parents for?
I wouldn't. I think 1 year they came down to see me, but you know, just simple things like that, you know, missing birthdays and missing big life events of like cousins getting married. And you know, one thing I really used to feel a little sad and is, I think, was, you know, I would see all my friends getting dropped by their parents and like people having, you know, things dropped off for them or food or their mom takes care of their laundry. Just simple things like that, I think, used to make me really sad because I just wish I had my parents here. And I remember they once came to see me. I think it was, I had honestly finished a year of school, more than a year and a half of school is when they first came to see me in the U.S. to see what my dorm was. And my parents went crazy because I told them all these experiences and I said, I wish, you know, you were immature, you're young, but you feel sad. And I think my dad went to Costco for the first time and he's like, whoa, this needs to come to Zambia.
Yeah.
And he bought me like, I don't know, hundreds of those notepads and so much snacks and so much oatmeal. And like, I remember coming back in a taxi and we all hauled it up. And And then when they were leaving for the airport in the taxi, I just felt so sad because I'm not going to see them again. Yeah. For a while, for a long time.
Yeah.
This makes me emotional.
I know. And I think I kind of have the same experiences in that sense. I feel like being away from your parents for that long a period, because essentially you're not living with your parents, right? I have same thing. I had a lot of friends who lived in Madison. They went to high school in Madison. They grew up in Madison. And like their parents are still in Madison. And they would go, they would, you know, every weekend, every other weekend, they would go to their parents' place and, you know, spend the weekend with them. Or they would go and do some fun activity with their parents. They'll go out for lunch on like a random Saturday. And I at least had the privilege of being able to go back home at least every 6 months. But I had the opportunity to do that and I'm grateful for that. But I do feel like I don't quite know my parents. And I feel like I kind of came of age away from my parents. And because of that, there's not just a generational gap between us. There is also a kind of cultural gap in a sense, right? I feel like if me and my parents lived in the same place, maybe, you know, we would have been able to build a more, you know, deeper, more meaningful relationship. It's not like I don't have a meaningful relationship with my parents now. I just feel like there's some things you miss out on when you only really get to go spend a few weeks at a time every year with them. And I feel like that's probably the biggest thing that I missed out on. Besides that, I was away from Natasha right from the get-go when it came to college, right? We started dating right at the end of high school. After all these decisions were kind of already made about me coming to the US and her going to South Africa. So sometimes I wish that that decision was probably, you know, me dating her probably happened a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Because I think I would have probably chosen to go to school, go do my college in South Africa with her.
Yeah.
But, you know, those things are all kind of, in retrospect, it feels like you can do so much or you could have changed so much.
Yeah.
And I do believe that things all happen for a reason. I do want to ask you, though, you know, we've thrown around the word home quite a bit. What is home for you?
So there's two homes for me. Whenever I feel this real sadness and like just this emptiness of, wow, this is too much. You know, my dad always just says, come back home. Because I know if I go back to Zambia, I somehow feel everything would be fixed. My problems would be fixed. And I think the when I'm really emotional and really sad, I wonder and say, why the hell am I doing all of this, man? Like I have a wonderful family, my husband who wants to go back to Zambia. We could not go through all of this and we could just go back home. We could go back to Zambia and we could just figure it out. But I also feel like home is now for me where Raul and I are together. And I think it's more about the functionality of the home. It's very difficult for me to tell you today that the US is my home. I don't see it yet because I just don't have the paperwork for it.
Yeah.
So yeah. For me, I think home functionally is where Rahul and I are together and where we're going to buy a home and settle down. Doesn't matter where it is in this world of being together. But I think whenever I'm really, really sad and I really just feel like I need that comfort, I would run back in a heartbeat to Zambia to my parents. But what about you?
The idea of home has kind of changed over time. I think when I first came to college, I was pretty convinced that Natasha was going to move back to Zambia, and I'm going to move back to Zambia. I am a geological engineer. I can go work in the mines. I don't care, you know. So for me, that was a big part of our plan. And then as time went on, I started realizing that, like, every time I'd go back to Zambia, the place had changed quite drastically every 6 months, every year. And it got to the point where I realized that for me, whenever I kind of associated Zambia and home in my mind, I associated with a very particular time in my life. Home, when I used to think about it in my early college days, was back to that high school period with all my friends at home, you know, Natasha there, with my parents there, and Zambia kind of, Lusaka at least, being what it was at that point in time. As I noticed, in a way, I felt like Lusaka was changing without me, and life was going on without me. And I also started getting more emotionally attached to the U.S. You know, you build a community here, you build friends here, you build relationships here. So that also made me feel like, okay, maybe this place can be home too. I don't need to be so, like, I don't need to reject it so directly right off the bat.
Right.
I think eventually it's gotten to a point of home is where Natasha is at this point. I think if me and her decide that, okay, we're moving to South Africa, that can be home. For me, it's just like me and her need to be in the same place, and that's all I really need. But then obviously you also need to think about it functionally. For me, if we move to Zambia, I don't know what I would do with my career. I have a very specific technical expertise that I enjoy, that I want to focus on. And it's difficult for me to see that happening in Zambia. But again, it's one of those things where, like, that doesn't mean there aren't opportunities in Zambia. There are opportunities in multiple other fields. I just didn't think about it when I came to college. So I think for me, home is where I can make money and wherever I can feel like I can start putting down roots, wherever I feel there's a sense of community, and wherever obviously Natasha feels the same way too. With that, we can, I think, wrap up this conversation. I don't know, Raksha. I feel really good about reflecting on our journey. I haven't really done this with so much intention in the past, but I'm glad we had this conversation. There's a lot of things that, you know, I learned from your story as well and from your experience as well. And I'm glad we kind of did this and picked each other's brains a little bit.
I'm so glad we did this, honestly. I mean, there was parts where I was feeling so emotional thinking back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we did it together. You know, it felt like a very safe space and, you know, just wanting to be vulnerable and very open with our journeys and wouldn't take anything back for it. Yeah. And very grateful for the life that we've been given. Of course, very privileged. So yeah. Very grateful for that.
I agree. And I really hope that those of you listening are able to relate to some of these stories because, you know, it isn't a particularly unique experience. I think these stories are more common than we think.
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you were able to take away something from our conversation. Please follow us on our Facebook and Instagram at Two Suitcases Pod. Feel free to leave feedback, ask questions, or even suggest topics for future episodes. Look out for the next episode on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcast. Thanks for unpacking with us.